Right, children, I want you to settle down. Put down what you're doing and listen. Now then, when I was a little boy, I wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up. Tell me, what would you like to be when you grow up? George.
Sir, I want to be a feminist.
Oh, really? That's interesting, but George, you can't be a feminist for a job. Being a feminist is more of a way of thinking, like being for the Labour Party or the Conservatives.
Jermaine Greer makes loads of money off it.
Yeah, well, all right. I suppose you've given a good example that proves some people can make a good living out of feminism. Now, Octavia, do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
Mr Little.
Oh, yes, Isabel.
Mr Little, I'd like to be a bishop because bishops get to wear a big dress and have candles and sing in a choir and play the organ.
But, Isabel, I don't think there are any bishops who are women.
A Little Anxiety by Tim Yokel.
My name is Nigel Little. I'm 34, single, a school teacher. I'm the only male teacher at my school. I don't know why, but some people find that odd. I teach 5- and 6-year-olds. I like music and travelling and reading. My favourite author is Bruce Higgins. He writes adventure novels, espionage and spying. I have absolutely no idea whether there are female bishops these days. Sometimes with the children, you just have to bluff it. I just debunked the little girl's aspirations. Do they have lady bishops these days? Oh, crikey, I must make more of an effort to watch the Channel 4 news of an evening.
I think you should, Nigel.
I mean, what if I'm wrong? The class may well, from this point on, just dismiss me as some kind of kindergarten charlatan. Oh, heaven knows how that will affect their futures. Perhaps they'll all become anarchists and smash the state.
Would that be so bad?
Oh, childhood's such a delicate thing.
Well, I find it obscene that a little girl would want to be a bishop. What must her parents be telling her? It's the God Squad brainwashing their offspring, that's what it is. She'll end up a very confused and guilt-ridden teenager. Anyway, I'm supposed to be on playground duty.
I'd have to say Josephine, Miss Webster, is my only real friend at the school. We're both pretty new there and we both teach the same age group. The other teachers are all old enough to be my mother. I haven't really bonded with them. Most of them are smokers, so I tend to sit on the other side of the staff room. Usually at lunch breaks I have a sandwich and read my book. That particular day I was right near the end of Fist of Blood, one of the best Bruce Higgins's I've read. I opened at page 845, only 2 pages to go. How could Commander Roger Ricks get out of his appalling scrape and save Estonia, tied upside down to a thermonuclear device with an electrified metal floor beneath him and 30 seconds left on the counter?
Ricks looked down at the ceiling and assessed the situation.
Damn these power-crazed would-be world dominators with artificial limbs,
he thought as he began gnawing through the wire rope that held him flat against the cold steel of the nuclear bomb. The seconds clicked on the dial. Surely there was no way out, not this time. But then, a trap door opened in the wall and a head appeared. It was Curvature Thrust, the young blonde paleontologist he'd seduced in Helsinki. Ricks let the frayed rope drop from his mouth and yelled to her,
Quick! No time to explain! Tip up the acid tank and short out the circuitry. Don't ask why, just do it.
Curvature looked horrified, but sensing the urgency and rough authority in Rix's voice, she unquestioningly complied, her slender arms struggling with the weight of the acid. There was an almighty clang, and then the hissing of corrosive fluids eating through titanium. As the gases filled the room, Rix wriggled free of his bindings and proceeded to climb to the top of the bomb.
Your timing is impeccable,
he called down to the attractive young Finn, after first opening the covering plate of the detonator. There were now only 10 seconds left on the clock.
If I can defuse this thing, I'm going to be free for the rest of the day. How about champagne and strawberries back at my hotel?
Oh, Roger,
she called back.
Just promise me you won't disappear in the middle of the night like Helsinki.
Ricks scanned the flashing lights and switches of the control panel.
Aha, Russian made,
he realised with a broad smile.
Green, red, then yellow. That should do it. Look out below!
He shouted as the huge tubular device came crashing down to the floor. There was an almighty crunch. Out of the bent steel and dust, Rix climbed to his feet and took Curvature roughly in his arms. Curvature trembled in his powerful embrace and said,
Is there going to be an atomic discharge?
Anything's possible.
Mr. Little.
Rix smirked slyly and kissed her hard on the mouth.
Mr. Little!
Yes, darling? Oh my God. I'm sorry, Head. I was immersed in a book.
I've called your name from across the room 5 times. Are you deaf? I'd like a private word with you, Mr. Little, please. Put your novel away and follow me.
Yeah, said Mistress. What's this about?
This sort of thing happens. I can't say I ever get used to it. The headmistress is essentially decent, but it's those around her, her deputies, her informers. It's a cross you bear these days, I suppose. People are more suspicious than they used to be, and I don't really blame them. Primary schools are very matriarchal. That day was a particularly bad one, though. The thing I get embarrassed about is, what does it look like to the kids? There were 2 from my class stood outside her office, hands on heads. What did they think is what I have to wonder.
Have you 2 rascals been sent to see me?
Miss? Yes.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Jonathan. You 2 in trouble again?
No, sir.
You look like 2 captured soldiers.
It was him that did it, Mr. Little. All I did was help him carry the bricks. I didn't do anything. I've been falsely accused, sir.
Well, the head's going to tell me off first, so that'll buy you some time, won't it?
You're not in trouble, sir.
Oh, yes, he is.
Loopy Little's getting done.
Sit down, Nigel. Would you send in Mrs. Taylor now? Hello, Mrs. Taylor. Do sit down.
Thank you.
Oh, I never get used to that look they have. The dishevelled Mrs. Taylor, a concerned parent, bowed by her heavy shopping bags and life of cruel northern subjugation. A not-so-unfamiliar situation was unfolding. They are always greeted politely. The head greets them with that smile she has, a smile that could have sunk ships.
Now then, this is Mr. Little. Mr. Little, this is Mrs. Taylor, a concerned parent. This is a delicate matter which I hope we can resolve in a mature and discreet manner. Now, Mrs. Taylor, who works in the hairdresser's shop down the road and who has a girl, Kylie, in the 3rd year, has a concern which involves you, Nigel.
Oh?
This is a very delicate matter, as I say, and I think it best if we try and get everything out in the open to avoid any further confusion and upset. It seems last Wednesday lunchtime, Mrs. Taylor observed you entering the Agalawata newsagents across the road from her salon. She says that she saw you hanging about in there some time, eyeing the adult magazines on the top shelf before you finally reached up and took one down. You were then seen...
And it weren't the end with the posh mucky mags either. It were the other end where they keep all the nasty stuff for the perverts.
Thank you, Mrs. Taylor. As I was saying, you were observed purchasing a magazine which was wrapped in a brown paper bag and which you put into your briefcase. Now... Naturally, Mrs. Taylor is concerned that being so close to the school, you might have been observed by our pupils out for their lunch break, and thus conveying to them the impression that... She's rightly concerned about the image this sends to the community, especially in light of you being a male teacher of very young children.
Exactly.
So you're saying if a man goes into a shop and buys a top-shelf magazine, that makes him a child molester?
Of course, I remembered the incident clearly. It had been quite an awkward moment, and I did fear being observed. In fact, the magazine in question was, at that very moment, in my briefcase under my chair, still wrapped in a brown paper bag.
Nobody is calling you a pervert, Mr. Little. We just want to hear your side of things and to try and clear this little problem up.
Well, I don't have to explain my actions to anyone. I'm not guilty of any crime. You can't accuse someone of being a sexual deviant just because you saw him buying a magazine in a shop from across a busy high street. I refuse to discuss this matter any further. Not because I can't explain myself, but because I shouldn't have to. Frankly, I couldn't care less what you saw, Mrs. Taylor.
Bloody cheek.
You're not in possession of the facts.
The train on platform 1 is the 1109 service to Leeds. Calling at Morley, Cottingley and Leeds.
On the weekend, I went into Leeds. I had my Bruce Higgins with me and read the last few paragraphs. These were starting to become a bit familiar too. Well, the outcomes in a Bruce Higgins were always of a kind. They're good, but, you know, there's a traditional ending. Well, this time Roger X was saluted by Russia's military top brass, and then he went back to his hotel to bonk the buxom Finnish scientist. Well, anything else would have been out of character. It's impossible to imagine Rix doing anything else. Oh, he's a slave to his reputation. In Leeds, I planned to do a bit of shopping. I had a date arranged with a dental hygienist that evening and had set out that day with the intention of buying a new shirt and some slightly adventurous underwear. By about 3:30, though, I was having second thoughts. This hygienist, a friend of a friend, was just getting divorced, looking for a new man in her life. Apparently, she liked line dancing. Hardly curvature thrust. She did have a vaguely scientific background, though, and was at least halfway to being buxom. Sadly, only the bottom half. Oh, I thought about calling her. Hello, Denise?
Hello, Nigel.
Well, it's about tonight. I can't go line dancing with you because the precepts that have so far given dimension to my moral and intellectual horizon have suddenly and inexplicably become abstracted.
Well, give us a call when you're feeling better, won't you, love?
Oh, yes, I will. And thank you for respecting my metaphysical dilemma. I didn't call her. I ended up in a little bookshop in an arcade by some noisy piece of vaguely figurative water sculpture. Leeds has some very delightful arcades. Straight away, I went to look for Bruce Higgins novels. I always do. It's a habit. I've read every single one of them, and I knew there wasn't a new one due out for at least 6 months. But I like to see a good selection. The more there are, the more I feel my taste in literature validated. Sometimes I rearrange them, put my favourites to the front.
Can I help you, sir?
What's new? I'm between Higginses. Or is there a new Tom Clancy to tide me over?
There's a Frederick Forsyth. Oh, but he's never quite the same as Bruce.
Bruce is the master of his genre. Oh, he can describe technical military equipment, pace a steamy bedroom encounter, and turn up the heat of chase action far better than any of his contemporaries.
Ah, he's certainly produced a fine body of work, sir. I look forward to each new Golden Boss title.
Well, I remember my first one. Total Steel. Oh, I see you've got three copies. I would have stocked more myself.
Of course, sir.
And The Naked Razor Blade. One copy there.
Always sells quickly, that one.
No Screaming Warheads. Pity.
I've got five on order.
And no Heavy Impact.
Oh, shame on this joke of a bookshop, sir.
Wait a minute. What's this one? A Little Anxiety? I've never heard of that one.
Me neither, sir.
Oh, Diamond Creosote, it's the right publisher. Quite extraordinary. This isn't a joke, is it?
No, sir, I hadn't noticed it.
A Little Anxiety. Surely this is a mistake. Well, there's no new title due out for a long while. And I followed Higgins's career from day one. I've heard nothing about this title. Not in the press, and not from my local bookshop, who always keep me informed.
It's a real mystery.
Our friends, too, who are fans. We often talk about these books. Surely someone would have said something if they'd heard about a new title. Oh, can you check on your computer?
Yes, sir.
The dedication says, to my most loyal and true.
There's only the one in stock. I shall order more right away.
Well, I suppose I'd better buy it.
Oh, that's my favourite phrase in the English language, sir.
It was a weird thing, that book. It made me forget my problems for a moment. I sat on the train home and read the first page.
You're to be promoted to a high office in intelligence. Well, that's the word from HQ,
said Commander Valance. His cigar glowed in the shadowy half-light. Rix could not even pretend to hide his displeasure. He looked at the portrait of Churchill which hung over the fireplace for some kind of inspiration. None came.
I can't accept some desk job, no matter how paramount. I'm not ready for that yet. No, I just couldn't hack it.
You're to be replaced, it would seem,
said Valance, pouring a sherry. Emotionless as a stone, he took an envelope marked Top Secret from his briefcase and opened it.
Our new agent in international covert ops will be your protégé.
Not Beckworth,
gasped Rix.
She's not ready, not capable. This is absurd.
These orders are from the very top, Roger,
said Valance, inspecting the documents. Rix turned away. He felt his whole world being snatched away from him and his throat filled with searing bile. How could they do this? His years of experience, his impeccable track record. Surely this was a mistake. It was insanity. A moment later, Rix turned on his heel and marched up to the desk. From beneath his jacket, he took out his service automatic and his chipset ID and put them silently onto the mirror-like mahogany.
You can tell the top brass I won't be accepting their offer of promotion,
he said thoughtfully.
I'm resigning. As of today. Good day, sir.
Morning, Mrs. Stobbs.
Morning.
Morning, Mrs. Bream. Nice weekend.
Very nice, thank you. Yourself?
Line dancing. It's worse than it looks.
Would you like a tea?
Oh, yes, lovely. I'm just going to pop to the men's room. Well, my room, really. I'm the only man here, after all. Well, there is the caretaker, but he's got his own in the boiler room. Anyway, back in a mo.
Quick, Luke. He's left his case. Have a look inside.
Oh, I don't like to. Do you think it's in there?
I can see something in there. Brown paper bag.
Oh, God. Do you think that's it? Oh, he's such a creepy man.
Have a look. Have a look.
What if it's horrible? I wouldn't dare touch it. Mrs. Taylor said it was the filthiest there is.
I'll do it. You guard the door.
Come on, quick. Come on.
Oh, God. What if it's stomach churning?
Take it out of the bag.
Oh, my goodness me. Look at that.
What does it say? What does it say?
Amateur, local, railway enthusiast. Monthly.
Eh?
What?
What are you doing in my case?
Sorry.
Find anything interesting in there? Interested in what Mr. Little puts in his sandwiches, perhaps? Or perhaps you fancied a look at this?
We're very sorry, Mr. Little.
It's this, isn't it? You wanted to see my filthy, vomit-making, child-molesting pornography. Well, I hope you were shocked, you nosy, man-hating, cackler, backstabbing... Oh, there are other types of journal on the top shelves of newsagents. Journals that a man might also be embarrassed about buying. Embarrassed enough to want a bag, anyway. Well, I hope you're not too disappointed. Now you know, I like trains. What will you make of that, I wonder? Funny how word gets round, isn't it? Mr. Little, the pervert. Thank you all so much. Thanks for your professional support. It's called A Little Anxiety by Bruce Higgins.
Bruce Higgins.
I've got an ISBN if it helps. As a matter of fact, I've got a copy of the book right here.
Well, it's listed here, published 2 months ago. We just don't seem to have any in stock. I'm sure we'll be getting them in. I'll try again next week.
I've been to 3 other bookshops. None of them have a copy. They all have it listed, but none of them have any for sale.
Well, that is very strange.
It is strange that a best-selling author whose last book sold 2 million copies publishes his next title straight into paperback with no publicity or interview, and then no one stocks any.
I'm very sorry, sir. Have you tried your local supermarket? Sort of book they'd have by the checkout.
It's a real enigma, Nigel.
I even phoned some of the big bookshops in London. I haven't got it. I left an email inquiry at the Bruce Bulletin board. Oh, can't we get these kids a proper football?
What's wrong with that one?
What do you mean, what's wrong with it? It's got the bloody Spice Girls on it. Cracking save! Well done, that lad. You'll be playing at Elland Road one day.
That's Penny Gowan.
Never.
It is.
No. She was in Green A, couldn't even hold a pen.
There you go.
There you go, indeed. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to ring up the publisher.
You do that, Nigel. And in the meantime, you can always get a hold of a copy of Trainspotter Monthly, can't you?
Oh, now that's not funny.
You know, I was really sorry about all that. I wish I'd stood up for you a bit more than I did. I really don't know how you stick it round here. We're all such bloody small-minded people. We don't think we are, but we are all the same.
Sounds a cliché, but I just love teaching. I told my kids I wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up, but to be honest, I've always wanted to teach.
When I was a girl, I wanted to be Margaret Thatcher.
The incident in the staff room didn't really bother me. In fact, I sort of enjoyed it, I think. Oh, it cleared the air. The only thing that really bothered me was that all the excitement-starved ladies who had their hair done at Rio Styles were still being informed by our concerned parent that I was, well, you know. But then, as we stood there watching the kids playing, we noticed this woman coming up the school drive.
She looked to be in an awful rage, and I knew it was me she'd come to see. She had this orange leather coat on, and she was dragging her little boy behind her. Jonathan Howarth, he was crying, couldn't quite keep up.
God, look at this.
You!
Here we go.
You're certainly flavour of the month.
You, what have you been doing to my lad? What are these, eh? What are these hand marks here on his back? I call that interfering. Interfering with the lad. Well, I'll tell you what, Sunshine. My husband's on his way here as we speak to give you such a seeing to.
Oh, God, look. Did you listen to your son? Did you perchance think to ask him what actually happened this morning?
He said you did it, that's all I need to know. And I know all about you, Mr. Little. I've heard it all. You and your child pornography.
Your son fell out of a tree this morning break, Mrs. Howarth, and I, by some miracle, managed to catch him. God knows where he'd be now if I hadn't seen him dangling up there. So if you want to make accusations...
I'll make accusations, all right.
You children, go away. Go away and play. Over the other side there.
Mrs. Howarth, why don't we go inside and discuss this over a nice cup of tea?
Is this the dirty little bastard that's been interfering with my lad?
That's the one.
Right.
Oh, come on.
Dad.
Not in front of the children.
Go on, let him
come here.
Stop it!
Go on, give it, go on, do it!
Dad! He caught me out the tree. Dad! Leave him alone, he didn't do out. Dad, leave him, he didn't do out.
It was decided by the headmistress that Mr. Little should take some paid leave as soon as I was discharged from the hospital. That was the following Thursday. Well, my class had come to see me. They'd made some cards and things, and that cheered me up a bit. I was dropped off home by an ambulance man, and for a long while I just sat and stared out of the window, out over the streets and rooftops of my neighbourhood. I tried to cheer myself up by reading a bit of My Mysterious Bruce Higgins. The story so far had been a bit of a deviation from a typical Higgins. Ricks had left the Secret Service and had opened a retirement home for ageing spies. His understudy, Tasmin Beckworth, had taken over Ricks's old job and was solving the current international crisis through diplomacy and letter writing. All rather boring, really. What was interesting, though, was how Higgins had built up the impression that more was going on in the retirement home than anyone seriously suspected. Could Ricks be tapping into an old spy network to get ahead of Beckworth? My guess, he was. At about 6, a good friend called.
Hello, soldier. How are you feeling?
Oh, Josephine, I'm fine. My ribs hurt a bit when I move.
How are you feeling generally?
Oh, I don't know. A bit disillusioned. My dad was a teacher. Did I ever tell you that?
I don't think you did.
I was just thinking about when I was a child. People would come up to him in the street, you know, former pupils. And these were once kids he'd whacked with the cane and slapped round the head and God knows what. But they always thanked him, said how they'd learned the important things of life from him. Now me, I save a child, catch a kid falling out of a tree, and I get beaten black and blue.
What will you do?
Don't know. I'm fed up of my little life, my little house, this little town, the little-minded people in the little community I try and serve. I'm fed up, even my little class of little children. I want something bigger. Something more on the scale of Roger Ricks. Something international, perhaps. A mission. What I want is to be respected. As respected as Roger Ricks, who, by the way, is always taken seriously by his peers and admired for his professionalism. No one snoops about in his briefcase. What I want is to feel no self-doubt about what I do, but like to be a big-calibre player doing a big-calibre job.
Oh, Nigel...
Perhaps I should get a sex change.
Please don't. Imagine what they'd say at the hair salon.
I'd be able to go there myself, get a blue rinse.
Come back soon, won't you? Some of us miss you.
I don't know what came over me, but as soon as I put the phone down, I became resolved. I suddenly felt I knew what I was going to do. I was going to go on a mission. It was obvious to me that I should. It was right there on my lap in front of me. My international paperback mystery, published by Diamond Creosote and priced £6.99. It's hard to explain. I was all bandaged up, but I felt like a giant. It was like in films where a guy gets beat up, but then he just gets up and dusts himself down. I picked up the phone and pecked out some digits. I was cool and lean, and when the voice said,
"Can I help you?"
I said,
"I want a one-way ticket to London, first class."
"It's only £5 more for a return."
"It doesn't matter. I've no idea at this time where I'll be heading from there."
"Would you like smoking or non-smoking, sir?"
Non-smoking.
The train now arriving at platform 7 is the late running 10:45 service from Leeds. We do apologise for the late running of this train. This was due to some international espionage on the track.
Friday morning. I arrived in King's Cross. I'm buzzing on coffee and carrying only my Walkman and a little anxiety. On a hunch I was being tailed, I exited through a side entrance and quickly hailed a cab.
Taxi!
Where to, Squire?
Diamond Creosote Publishing, Great Pretext Street.
Undaunted by the sudden upshift in size and scale of the capital city, I sped away up the Euston Road. London went by in a blur of speed and carbon monoxide. With a noticeable urgency, my cab sailed down Whitehall. I glanced knowingly at the Ministry of Defence. As we flew past Scotland Yard, the cabbie noticed my black eye.
"Had a little accident, did we?"
"Oh, just a scratch. You have to expect these things in my line of work."
"What are you, a school teacher?"
Great Pretext Street was a quiet, shady, tree-lined road with high Edwardian terraces blocking out the majority of daylight. There were cold black railings of solicitors' offices, austere brass plaques for accountancies, and the occasional embassy. I quickly found Diamond Creosote. I pushed the large, sturdy black door open and found a bright, modern reception area decorated with framed enlargements of the company's most prestigious book covers.
"Can I help you?"
"Ever heard of A Little Anxiety?"
"I'm not the anxious type."
"It's by Bruce Higgins, although I'm sure you knew that already."
"What about it, handsome?"
"Where would you suggest I go to get hold of more copies?"
"Perhaps a bookshop?"
"You may be surprised to learn I've already tried a bookshop. Dozens, in fact. The biggest and best in London. And Leeds."
"Then perhaps you weren't looking in the right section."
"No bookshop has a copy of this novel. And they all say they've never had any. Britain's best-selling thriller writer, your highest-earning author, writes another blockbuster. It was published 2 months ago. So how comes I'm the only one who has a copy? What's going on?"
"Could you wait here a minute? I shall make inquiries."
And so I waited. The room was overly warm and the air was dry. A spindly little man with a limp entered from a side door with a postal sack. I eyed his uneven movements with suspicion. It was a bald man, surely over retirement age, dressed in badly fitting trousers and blue postman's shirt. He emptied the receptionist's out tray into his sack and then, from under his arm, tossed a clutch of assorted envelopes and postcards into the in tray.
"Good day, governor."
Before he hobbled away again, he shot me a wry, knowing wink. When he'd gone, I leaned over the delivery of post and, after a quick glance left and right, began sifting through. Mostly they were official-looking letters with windows and printed addresses. The postcards were mostly decorated invitations to functions and book launches. One large brown envelope, however, had a handwritten address and a familiar local postmark. I flipped it over and there, to my astonishment, was the name Bruce Higgins, followed by the address, Cromwell Manor, Appleston, North Yorkshire.
"What can I do for you?"
"I wanted information about this book."
"And do you have an appointment?"
"No, I do not."
"Then I suggest you come back when you have one."
"Dry your eyes, baby. I won't be coming back here. Your place is a bit too stuffy for my liking."
"Hello, it's Nigel."
"Hello, Nigel. Where are you?"
"London. I've just infiltrated the secret headquarters of Diamond Creosote. Higgins wasn't there."
"What?"
"But don't worry. I know the location of his top secret bunker."
"Nigel, what are you talking about?"
"I'll report in at 2200 hours.
"Well, you do that. and have a lie down.
Understood.
Yes, Nigel. Understood. Bye then.
Over and out. It took almost 6 hours to get from London to North Yorkshire. The early evening shadows were long and slender as I stepped out of the carriage at Settle Station. I asked the railway guard if he'd heard of a place called Appleston. The guard said he had.
And how do I get there?
Where?
Appleston.
There are two buses every day. One goes direct,
yeah,
and the other round the houses.
Well, I prefer the direct.
They're both long and bumpy journeys, but since both buses set out and return before one in the afternoon, I suppose there is little point discussing the comfort of the ride.
Are there any other modes of transport available?
The modes available are limited to only two.
Uh-huh. One of those modes being a bus tomorrow morning?
Correct.
And the second, my 2 feet?
Yes, sir. Those two flat things at the end of your legs.
Well, thank you so much.
Though my surroundings had changed quite dramatically, I had no interest in admiring the view. I had other objectives. Finding a signpost on the main road, I discovered that Appleston was 15 miles north. Not a problem. That's Halifax to Leeds, roughly. Not really an immense distance when you think about it. So I set off on foot. Pretty soon, however, it was dark, and the road had no lighting. When I came to a junction and there was no signpost, I began to feel just a twinge of unease. About an hour later, I came to another junction. Though this one had a signpost. It said Appleston, 15 miles. I was about to give up. Then I heard a distant car engine. The sound seemed to die away, but then it came back. I couldn't tell what direction it was coming from. Then there it was, chugging up the hill behind me. A Land Rover with no roof, and, judging by the speed it was moving, no third or fourth gears.
Please! Please stop! Hello! I can't stop! Oh, please, I'm lost!
I can't stop! Car stuck in second gear! You'll have to run and jump on back!
Oh, God. I'm glad you saw me.
Hard not to see you, waving like Robinson Crusoe at an air show. Where are you trying to get to?
Appleston.
Take a while. I'm keeping it under 20. I hope you don't mind the wipers and the blowers on full blast. I don't want it overheating. What's that you got there?
A book I'm reading.
Oh, Bruce Higgins.
Yes, I'm a big fan.
Well, this is Bruce's neighbourhood. It lives at Cromwell Manor. Can't stand him myself. Mindless, middle-of-the-road formula thrillers for the oipoloi. No offence.
All right.
And they're completely sexist. They belong to another era, they really do.
Right, well, I'll just read my hopelessly obsolete book then. I'll try not to be distracted by the heater blowing hot air up my trouser leg and the squeaking wipers.
So you do things your way. I did them mine,
Rick said as he opened a jar of baby food and dipped in the spoon. His apron, pristine white not 5 minutes ago, was now covered with splats and smears of many varieties and colours. Beckwith, hands on her curvaceous hips, looked on.
The thing is, Ricks,
she said accusingly,
I averted a world disaster without firing a single shot, without crushing a prestige car, without being chased by a marksman in a helicopter, and without seducing a string of meaningless bed partners. I used tact and diplomacy and got the same results.
I still say my way was better,
Ricks protested as he spoon-fed a decrepit old former MI5 man some apple sauce. Beckwith sighed. It seems she would never get through to him, make him see. Not by shouting at him and not by discussing things calmly and logically.
I just thought this would be a happy ending for both of us,
she grumbled.
You seem quite happy with your new life, and I'm happy with mine.
Ricks tried to remain composed.
It's not a happy ending. I may look happy in my new life, but it's a facade. I liked things how they were, but those times are never going to come back. You've proved that a woman can do the job better, and now I'm redundant. Great for you, dear, but not a happy ending.
Tasmin Beckwith was lost for words. This was not what she'd expected to hear.
Well, don't just stand there,
Rick said, dismayed.
If you're going to hang around, you can get the bingo machine working. Start calling some numbers out.
Beckwith scowled as she gazed about at the odd collection of elderly gentlemen. Some drank sherry, others read the newspaper, some sat in wheelchairs and slept.
I don't like the way they look at me,
she grumbled, her arms folded in a tight defensive posture.
They're all undressing me with their eyes.
You're a female spy. You bring back a lot of memories for them.
Rix laughed.
Like I always say, the day you stop looking is the day you're not a man.
Reluctantly, Beckwith relented and crossed the room to fill the bingo machine with coloured balls. A few of the slumbering ex-spies were aroused by the familiar buzzing sound it made. Rix handed out cards to the conscious and gloated at Beckwith's all-too-apparent embarrassment.
Right then,
she said at length.
Eyes down, gentlemen.
And that round shape up there on the hill is the Copston Hill Water Tower, built in 1958.
You could do this for money, you know. Farmer Rushton's local silhouettes of interest.
That's a suggestion. One you'd be interested in here. This is where old Higgins lives, that mansion house up there.
Oh, is it?
Quiet place, never see any movement.
Actually, I think I'll walk it from here.
Suit yourself. I can slow down to about 5 and then you'll have to jump for it.
Right. Thanks for the lift.
It was nice meeting you, Mr. Rix.
Cool.
Good luck with your top secret government mission.
Higgins's mansion was dark and magnificent and, I suppose, suited the fantasy perfectly. But the closer I got to the house, the more I realised what I was actually doing. When I eventually knocked on the door, my silly macho daydream about this place being some kind of fortress, some sort of evil underground headquarters, well, it went. I thought, what do I imagine I'm doing here? What will I say to this man? Too late to think something up, the door opened.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Could I possibly see Mr. Higgins, if he's at home?
What's it concerning?
Oh, it's about his latest book. A Little Anxiety.
Come in.
I followed the woman in and we sat in this cosy country kitchen. I put the book down on the table. Everything had that look of nice, rustic opulence. The log stove, the open fire, the copper saucepans. All the furniture matched, even the bits that didn't. She smiled a lot, but in a sad, world-weary way. She asked a lot of questions and we got chatting. Before too long, I kind of forgot why I was there. I suppose, because it's easier with strangers, I found myself telling her all my fears and troubles. She seemed to understand.
So, they don't like you teaching their 5-year-olds. Well, it's a noble profession. There should be more young men doing it. I don't think it's healthy, teachers all being women gives young kids a slanted view.
The school's always had women till I came. Is Mr. Higgins around?
You want Bruce Higgins? I'm afraid you're looking at him.
I kind of knew he was you. When you opened the door. What's your real name?
Charlotte. Charlotte Tunnybridge. Nice to meet you. You see, Nigel, I can't publish under my real name because traditionally my readership don't accept spy thrillers by women authors. It's been a blessing and a curse. Thankfully, slightly more of the blessing than a curse. Just slightly.
I made a joke today about becoming a woman.
Seems a bit drastic if you ask me.
But why this book? I don't understand. Why just the one copy? I don't get that.
It was just an idea I had, Nigel. I'm a successful writer, becoming a bit eccentric in my old age. I did it because I could, I suppose. I thought, I wonder if I write a book and put just the one copy out in some obscure little bookshop, will it eventually find its way back to me? Because it's a mystery to the reader, because of curiosity. Or would it just disappear forever, unquestioned? I had this romantic notion that it would find its way into the hands of a true fan, you know. Mm. Get passed about, offered to the highest bidder.
You mean you're most loyal and true?
Something like that. I thought it might be meaningful. For the both of us.
Has it been meaningful? I'm not sure yet. I'm still a bit puzzled.
I take it you contacted the publisher. I left instructions if anyone turned up with a book. They were supposed to give you access to my address.
They did.
Anyway, I hope you don't mind that I'm not Bruce.
I think, in a way, I do mind, if I'm honest. Well, I came here with an image of Bruce Higgins in my head, one I'd cultivated over the years. Bruce Higgins is just Roger Ricks as an older man, still sharp, still a maestro with the ladies, still a man's man. I wanted to meet Bruce, to observe his masculine superiority, his prowess, to see how truly dynamic he really was. It's absurd, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think Ricks possesses a lot of qualities that men and women find reassuringly fundamental.
Would you ever consider coming to my school, talking to the children? Tell them about being a writer, or a lady writer with a man's name. I've always had this dream that one of my kids would grow up to be a famous writer. Or then I could say I was his teacher, or her teacher.
It's a possibility. We'll see. I'll make us some coffee.
Oh, you could pop in when you're doing the rounds, when you publish the book properly, doing your signings and things like that.
I don't do signings. I'm not what my readers expect to meet, am I?
No.
Besides, there aren't going to be any more copies of A Little Anxiety.
Well, why not? It's a good book. A bit off the beaten track for Roger Ricks, but by the end it really became quite, well, thought-provoking, poignant. It's an unsettling ending, but then it's not something there are any definite answers for. It's intelligent.
Unlike my other titles. The book's a present to you, Nigel. You're my most loyal and true. I wanted to find out if you existed, and here you are. I'm sure if there is some meaning, it'll come later.
Well, maybe it will.
You've travelled all over the country to get here. You did your detective work. You deserve it.
I don't know what to say. It's such a special gift.
Oh, God, I can't get the lid off this coffee.
Give it here.
In A Little Anxiety, Michael Spitzer played Nigel Little. Other characters were played by Alice Bardswell, Anita Dave, Bob Armstrong, Carol Bain, Dan Edwards, David Hooper, Ellen Miles, Ernie Defenza, Fleur Sandler, Helen Bendel, Hilary Perkins, Janine Mayer-Smith, Johanna Vandenbroek, Kevin O'Neill, Laura Wilkinson, Michael Towner, Tabitha Cohen, and Jill Ray. The studio manager was Alan Morgan. A Little Anxiety was produced by Charlotte Simon, Janine Mayer-Smith, and Tim Yokel.